I'm Kenny McIntosh, joined here, as always, on the SmackDown Summary by Sondra. We are here to give you episode 29 of the SmackDown Summary, covering the February 7th episode of the show. My voice is going a little bit, so Sondra may have to piggyback me through this episode. How are you, Sondra?
I'm doing pretty well. My voice is okay for now, although I think I'm getting sick because Mr. Saunders been sick. So I'm really hoping that, like, me getting sick doesn't happen throughout the course of this episode, because that would suck. But we'll see.
I love the idea that you could get sick in the space of 45 minutes.
It's happened before. Have you ever had that where you get a cold and you feel it coming on? Because, like, I feel like I'm getting a cold coming on, and then all of a sudden you're like, I can't breathe anymore. What the fuck is this?
I get to a point where I wake up or something one day and I go, oh no, oh, it's coming. And then I try and take, like, every possible drug to stop it from coming. And most of the time it works. Like, most of the time you can kind of, it's that one time where, like, if you get up that day and then you end up going out drinking or something.
Yeah.
And
it's just like, then it's just all done.
Now, I mean, we've had a lot of reaction to the Raw Rundown this week. Did you know about David's Midget Mud Wrestling promotion? Was that
something you were familiar? News to me, actually.
He has kept it on the quiet, but I will be continuing to unearth secrets about his past life. any opportunity. So SmackDown this week, the go-home show for Elimination Chamber. They were in Seattle, Washington. They did this video package at the beginning on Randy Orton and John Cena. And it's like, what's funny to me is, like, I think most people are kind of like, oh, you know, Cena and Orton, that's cool for SmackDown. And then, like, they show these videos of being like, you know, the feud of the generation. And you're like, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's calm it down. Because, like, I always feel like when they're wrestling on a show that's not very big, I'm like, yeah, cool. That's fun. That's a nice wee nod. But as soon as they try and make it like, you know, Hogan Warrior, Austin Rock, I'm a bit like, nope, nope, don't want it.
Well, you know what I thought was funny was they were in Seattle, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Daniel Bryan calls attention to his retirement a year ago. But also, do you remember what else happened in Seattle?
Oh, that was the championship ascension ceremony?
Yes, where the crowd completely hijacked. And who was in that main event match? I mean, it wasn't on that show in Seattle, but who was, like, the main focus of that main event segment?
TLC unification match, yeah.
TLC unification match. It was John Cena and Randy Orton.
To be fair, though, that wasn't as bad as the reaction they got at the Royal Rumble the following year.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't think I've ever been so happy to see Bray Wyatt in my life.
I know, right?
In hindsight, I would have said, Bray, run away from him. But, you know, you live and learn. So we've got the SmackDown orgy
announced
table, as always.
But isn't it interesting that, like, the power of a good story, because I was actually looking forward to Bray Wyatt, or for John Cena versus Randy Orton. Because I was like, the story feels different. We haven't seen it in a while. And
also because it's not that, part of the reason that we like it is because that's not the story, but you're just getting that as a byproduct of the story.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just sort of a means to an end. And as a means to an end, I was pretty into it. It was like, we haven't seen that match in a good long time. So yeah, why not play it up? I mean, it was pretty hilarious, all of the times that they called it, like, the feud of a generation, and it's this hugely important thing, you know, right? But, I mean, if they want to play it that
thing.
Way, it's, you know, for them.
The thing is, it was smart for them to build it up, you know?
Yeah.
Whether it's, I mean, John Cena and Randy Orton always, whenever they do these video packages, and they do them every couple of years, where they basically, because if you remember, there was talk of John Cena and Randy Orton main event in WrestleMania 27.
I wouldn't initially have remembered that. I wasn't watching.
And then, you know, they did the unification thing. So there's been times throughout the years where, like, WWE build them to do these matches. And, like, I just think that these two guys, on a big pay-per-view stage, don't work that well together.
No.
I feel like they always work better with, like, Orton works really well when he's, like his best opponents he ever had were guys like Mick Foley or Christian or Mark Henry, like, guys who just were completely different to his style.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Cena's like the old veteran you need to work around to kind of, and then Cena is just one of these people, he just has great chemistry, some people, and not with others.
Mm-hmm. And Randy Orton and John Cena are fine together, but it's not like I'm going back and watching John Cena versus Randy Orton matches the way I would watch, you know, John Cena versus AJ Styles, or even Randy Orton versus Christian. I really liked that feud.
That was really good. So they played it up big style, as they should. We had the orgy announced table, all four of them still there.
Of course.
Now, I had to watch this show back because, unfortunately, I was watching it live on a stream.
When you say recovered. Watching it on a stream.
Yeah. So basically what happened was I was doing this. What Culture do a live stream for SmackDown on their subscription thing. And Ross, King Ross, and Adam Pacitti are to do the SmackDown one. And I've always heard that, like, the Raw one is, like, Adam Blompey and Jack the Jobber, and they do, like, analysis, you know? And then on SmackDown, Pacitti and Ross just drink. I thought, well, if I'm ever going to do one, I know the one I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So, because the last time I did a live stream was No Mercy when I fell asleep. So let's not go into that, but... So they managed to coax me into doing it. I thought it'd be fun, and I got a wee bottle of vodka, and that was fine. And then Ross started talking about wrestler shots, which means that you, like, gargle a shot in your mouth. And I, for whatever reason, thought it was a good idea to not do it with my vodka, or to do it with Pacitti's gin, or to do it with Ross's Jack Daniels. I thought all three together.
Which sounds like the most horrendous idea in the entire world, basically.
Yeah, and I began to attempt one gargle, and it didn't happen. So anyway, the offshoot is I missed a large... we were watching it, and we could see things that were happening, but, like, they were watching it on a really bad illegal stream, right? And I was like, why can we not get, like, a Sky Go account where you can, like, log in and watch it on Sky Sport? I don't understand. Anyway.
You'd think What Culture would be able to foot the bill for that if they're making you watch it on a live stream for extra. I mean, doesn't some of that extra money pay for... Come on, What Culture, what are you doing?
Well, I mean, that's very, very down the line, the sort of things they need to sort. But so I had to watch it all back because I'd only really seen things. I couldn't hear the promos. I couldn't hear the actual back and forth. So, like, I saw Brian come out at the beginning. Daniel Bryan comes out, great hometown ovation. And I saw The Miz come out and interrupt him, but I didn't hear any of the dialogue, you know. So watching it back the next day was interesting just to kind of see how it all played out. But I thought this first segment was excellent. Daniel Bryan coming out. Talks, you know, as you said, kind of, you know, took it back to his retirement speech last year. Said that he's glad to be the general manager of SmackDown. He's going to be a dad. Then The Miz comes out because, of course, the sound of Daniel Bryan talking about being a father would entice The Miz to interrupt him.
Of course it would, because The Miz is scum. Brilliant, brilliant scum. Like,
and also, like, how does he get that? Right, so you're more of a clothes knowledgeable person than I am.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that The Miz was wearing here?
I don't even know what you would call it, honestly. I don't think that sort of garment has a name. When Dean Ambrose came out and said, "You look like a shoe," I laughed so hard. Because that was the best way to describe how Dean Ambrose... I mean, maybe he looked more like a boot than a shoe, but I'm not going to mince words here. Like, he looked ridiculous. Because he's wearing his, like, headscarf deal, and then it has this big old zipper down the front, and it's sort of like leather, but I don't even know. I don't know what that would be. It's not quite a jacket. It's sort of jacket-like, but only if you were trying to dress up as some sort of boot.
Yeah, because what I was thinking was, like, The Miz, how he manages to have the top of that hood thing placed perfectly on his head.
Yeah, because it's, like, halfway back.
That's what I try and do with my beanie, and I just get in trouble for it.
You and your beanie.
There is a reason for the beanie.
I know.
Did I explain it on here? Did I explain it on here? Okay.
Good. I don't remember where you've explained the reason for the beanie.
Listen, I don't like morning. I hate early mornings. And I don't mean early mornings like Sandra having to go up a podcast at 10 a.m. or 11 a.m. early mornings. I mean, like, 7 a.m. I do not enjoy 7 a.m. I don't want to still be up at 7 a.m. I don't want to be getting up at 7 a.m. 7 a.m. is a cunt.
It's, like, one of the worst times that ever exists in the world. Like, if I'm still up by 5, that's fine. If I'm still up by 7, that's just a little much.
Exactly. So, like... If I was to get up and, you know, because I'm trying to, like, grow my hair to kind of slick back so that eventually it should take me no time at all to do my hair. It should just be like, gel, slick back, out the house, on you go. But it's at that really weird point where it wants to flop all the time. So the upkeep of that is difficult. The upkeep of that is you know, washing it, blow drying it, putting mad stuff in it to volumize it and all that shit that I've been told to do. And it's good enough that I get up at 7 and leave the house. That's an accomplishment.
No, I would say that's an accomplishment. I mean, I'm someone who washes her hair like once a week, so I don't put that much effort in.
And you have the hair of 3 people.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the mist comes out and then he says, you know, you don't even wrestle anymore. I don't know why you're in a WWE ring. And then Brian responded with the best burn of the year. Where he said, well, well, I'm trying to remember the exact
I
way.
I think he said, well, not being able to wrestle never stopped you.
Yeah, and then everybody chants yes, and then like there's just this great couple of minutes where like the crowd are just so behind Brian, and the Miz is being a heel, and like it was just such an enjoyable segment to watch because there was a babyface, there was a heel, the fans were all behind the babyface, the heel was playing his role perfectly, and he was unlikable in it.
Because, like, you know how much I love The Miz, but in that moment, I felt like I was in the Seattle crowd chanting along with them, right? Like, I would absolutely be cheering for Daniel Bryan, booing The Miz, because that's exactly how it should be. And I really liked the fact that they didn't try to rush the crowd. Like, they knew. You could tell this was really smart on their part, because they knew that Daniel Bryan was going to get that kind of reaction in Seattle when he came back home for the first time since his retirement speech. And just like they gave him time for that retirement speech, they didn't give him, you know, that long here. But they had a few minutes to play with, clearly, because the back and forth with The Miz and Daniel Bryan took a while before Dean Ambrose's music hit. And I feel like they would have hit it a lot sooner if they were trying to rush the show along and hadn't built time in for this. And I'm really glad that they built it in, because it was fun and it was great for the crowd. And it was really enjoyable to watch at home, too. It wasn't, you know, a crowd hijacking a show. It was The Miz was completely egging them on. Being like, you know, when my hand goes up, your mouths go shut, which is, you know, the elementary school teacher way of trying to get you to be quiet that never works unless you actually respect the teacher. But when it's The Miz trying to do this, you know, that's just going to
It's not going to work.
It's not going to work.
Well, okay, cause there's that bit where Miz, you know, the crowd, I can't remember what was the chant. There's the bit where Miz is talking to Brian and the crowd keep chanting something.
I think they were chanting Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, they keep chanting Daniel Bryan. And like you say, Miz was allowed to sort of comfortably play around with it a little bit.
Because he just kept going, at the Elimination Chamber.
At the Elimination Chamber. At the Elimination
Chamber. And you know, if he were really trying to control the crowd and get them to stop, then he could have done that, because The Miz is good enough to do that. And Brian would have helped him with that. But clearly Brian was just out there having fun, being like, yay, they love me. And like, and then, I mean, Brian even eggs them on further, being like, I think he just said you can't get any louder.
Oh, Daniel Bryan. He's so good. I think the thing with Daniel Bryan is that he's just, it only really struck me when he was coming out here on this show that, like, he really is a big reason why SmackDown is such a good show.
Oh, yeah. He's an absolute asset to them.
And I actually think that the way that Shane and Brian are presented as their respective roles works really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like why, like, Shane had no reason to be there tonight.
No.
Like, there was no reason for him to be there. It was Brian's hometown. You know, give him the moment.
Yeah, I mean, Brian has the show managed, generally, so yep. Shane doesn't have to always be around because he's entrusted the show to Daniel Bryan. And shocker, Kenny, isn't it amazing that when your stories are focused on the wrestlers and their issues and their drama and them fighting and wanting to fight each other and not on which authority figure has the most authority and who can yell the loudest? Like, isn't it crazy how much more compelling the show is when you actually just focus on the wrestlers and use the authority figures as more, like, setting, like, background
it's
setting.
It's baffling that it can work, isn't it? And I even liked that the couple of weeks we had Shane on Talking Smack, which was kind of like, you know, he was getting more involved in the show because Brian had some stuff to do, you know, and that was a fun dynamic to see Renee work with him and him talk to him interviewing the wrestlers and stuff. So, yeah, I think the whole mix is really good. But
I think it's because he's never trying to usurp power from Brian, or Brian's never trying to one-up Shane, because they're like, we're just doing our jobs.
The only thing that Shane has done on SmackDown that irked me a little bit, and it didn't get far enough where it really annoyed me, but it was one of the Talking Smacks that Shane was on where AJ Styles was on. and AJ Styles had was cutting a really impassioned promo, and he like touched Shane. And it wasn't like he didn't hit him, but he just touched him. And Shane kind of gave this look to say, whoa.
Don't touch me.
Which, I mean, he should be saying that. That is absolutely what he should be saying. You shouldn't be getting your hands put on you. But like, it felt more like, you know, AJ Styles, oh, you know, I'm getting fired up here. Didn't mean to touch you, whatever. And it's like, I don't want the world champion to have to apologize to the commissioner because he, during a promo, brushed against him, you know?
Right.
But apart from that, like, you know.
I was annoyed with Shane at first, like, especially with the whole Heath Slater thing. I was like, Shane was the dick in that situation, so I did not appreciate that. But he's gotten a lot better as he sort of faded into the background and just sort of let things go as they go. And now I like Shane again.
And I think he added to the, Survivor Series match in terms of the name that he was. You know, he got put out relatively early. It wasn't like he was the final guy in the match or anything. So we get Baron Corbin coming out to interrupt here. He didn't seem as confident when he came out here at first.
I think it's because of that thing growing on his face. Would you be?
Well, somebody superimposed my face onto Baron Corbin's face.
Really?
In Talking Smack. It's terrifying.
That sounds horrifying, actually.
But
is it just because of the hat?
Yeah, essentially.
Isn't there another one of your coworkers that always wears a hat too? Does he get shit for the hat?
Oh, Jack. No, he doesn't, but he should get shit for it.
I'm just saying.
I know, right? So if you have your Facebook open, Zandra, I'm gonna send it to you right now.
Okay.
And I'll do you know what I'll do? I'll post it on Twitter for everybody to have a look at. So somebody who decided that I looked at Baron Corbin, and I just look really, really, I look like I have really fat hands.
Oh my gosh, that's terrifying. Well, it's not just that it's your face on Baron Corbin, right? It's that they've chosen a picture that makes it look like you have, like, the head is shrinking into the neck, like the neck is trying to eat your face.
Yep. I mean, the thing is, there's a problem here. It's not a problem, but like, I essentially look like a, I don't know what I look like. I look a little bit like a woman, but then I have a beard.
I don't know if I would say maybe you look like a woman.
Maybe I'm going through a change. I don't know. But like, why is my hand fat? Anyway, you'll see the picture on Twitter, ladies and gentlemen. We don't want to give you this awful radio, just us looking at a picture that you can't see. But Baron Corbin comes out. He didn't seem super comfortable as much as he does on Talking Smack, but as soon as he got in there and he got going, he was fine. But like, he was essentially saying that, like, you know, Miz was talking too much in commentary last week, and he's talking too much again now. Miz was trying to get Corbin to help him to you know, say, let's work together in the Elimination Chamber. We could take everyone else out and let the best man win. And then Corbin said, well, he could take out Miz and wouldn't have to hear his mouth once again once he becomes champion.
Well, what I thought was interesting about that was it's so on point for their characters, right? Because the Miz is trying to form an alliance and be sneaky and, you know, like do what he does. Meanwhile, Maryse is standing between Baron Corbin and the Miz because Miz cleverly positions Maryse that way, or Maryse positions herself that way. She likes to be like, hey, you can't hit me. I'm just going to stand in front of my husband and then he'll be safe, right? And so then, of course, Baron Corbin's not going to want to be in an alliance. He's the lone wolf, vroom, vroom, motorcycle, right? And
vroom.
Yeah, vroom. As Dean Ambrose said, you stole the motorcycle from my entrance theme. Like, I don't know. Dean Ambrose was kind of cracking me up today. On this episode of SmackDown. But I don't know. I just, the confrontation between Miz and Baron Corbin, it's not something we've really seen much. And I just kind of found it intriguing. I was like, huh, that could be something for down the road, maybe. I mean, they're both heel, but I like that they have a dynamic, that it's not just the heels are friends and the baby faces are friends, and there's more of a complexity to it, which I appreciate.
And I think that you've hit the nail on the head. That all the characters were kind of on point here. You know, the characters were all exactly how you think they would behave. You know, and I like the Miz was sort of saying to Daniel Bryan about Corbin, you know, are you going to let him speak to me like that way? And you know, because as if like Daniel Bryan is going to be the sort of moral compass to help the Miz in a verbal joust with Baron Corbin.
Oh no, Baron, don't punch Miz in the face. That would be horrible.
And then Ambrose came out. Ambrose had a great line where he said, you know, Corbin stole the motorcycle noises from his entrance theme, which I appreciated. Ambrose is pretty good. I like the promo. I'm still at the point when he starts going silly. I go, oh, don't go too silly. And then he reins it in. It's fine. But like he's getting better.
He's been reining it in, which I think is the key. I do kind of, and this is just part of it being the build to Elimination Chamber. I'm starting to almost wish that Dean Ambrose weren't in this match and that Luke Harper were instead. Except for I'm really excited about Luke Harper versus Randy Orton, so I'm fine with that. It's just, I keep forgetting that Dean Ambrose is the Intercontinental Champion. Like, I keep just forgetting that Miz isn't the champion right now because I'm so used to the Miz being the champion. And Dean Ambrose doesn't seem to do much with his belt. And it's sort of like, don't go back into being when you were United States champion and never defending it. But I also understand that part of that is that we're building to the Elimination Chamber where he's in the Elimination Chamber match. So he doesn't really have a reason to be building his Intercontinental Championship reign at all. Because we had, you know, 2 weeks between Royal Rumble and Elimination Chamber to build something. So there just isn't time for that story. It just, as he came out with the belt, I was like, oh yeah, he's the champion. I shouldn't forget that though.
Yeah, well, I think the problem is the Intercontinental Championship is the last kind of, I mean, I guess it's the one negative you would say with the Intercontinental Championship is like ever since Ambrose won it, And Miz was sort of in a huff. You know, they then had the Royal Rumble, which kind of took away from the Intercontinental Championship. Now you get the Elimination Chamber. So there's not really a focus on the title.
And I'm a little worried because, like, if we get to WrestleMania and there's not an Intercontinental Championship feud with that again because the card's so full, like, I'm hoping that we get an Intercontinental Championship match at some point on WrestleMania.
I have a feeling that it's going to be Corbin and Ambrose for the
That would
the
make
IC
a lot
title.
Of sense, and that's what I'm hoping for, actually.
And then AJ Styles comes out obviously and explains that now of all the things that have ever been scripted in a wrestling promo, the word tickle butt is one of the top ones.
What even is that?
Are you guys done playing tickle butt?
Yeah, like it's weird because I was watching this on, you know, probably one of the same illegal streams that you were watching, and my internet was being really glitchy, so I missed it. I missed that line because it, like, skipped ahead a few seconds or something. And so then I saw on Twitter everyone's hashtagging tickle butt, and I was like, what the fuck did he say? I did watch it back to figure out what had actually happened in the opening promo, and there were other sections I had to watch back as well. So, yeah. But yeah, tickle butt, I guess that's a thing now. I mean, AJ Styles has all these clever phrases, right? Like, he was the one who said he got kicked right in the Jesus zipper at one point.
I mean, the thing about that, yeah.
Southern thing. I don't know.
The thing is, I try to accept in wrestling that sometimes they just speak in wrestling terms. But, like, sometimes it just gets to a point where you're like, nobody would ever speak like that. Like, in the world.
I feel like AJ Styles might. Like, I feel like that might be just, like, him being Georgia Strange.
Georgia Strange. Mm-hmm. Pure Georgia.
I have some very good friends from Georgia. I love Georgia. But, you know, they're just...
Do you get the midnight train? It was a wee joke there, folks, but the midnight train to Georgia.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, AJ Styles says that he cares about being WWE champion, plans to get the belt back at Elimination Chamber. Miz tells him he's not going to get his belt back and that people come to SmackDown because of Miz, not the rest of them. Brian eventually...
Which I love that he says to AJ Styles.
Yes, and then Brian eventually loses it because they're all bickering.
I was so happy that he lost it when men were bickering because Daniel Bryan, I love Daniel Bryan. I think he is a great part of SmackDown, but he has had this tendency whenever he's like involved with the women's feuds to just like not want to deal with women. And he plays it off as like, oh, women and their drama. And it's kind of frustrating because he just looks like he can't be arsed to like speak with women ever because they're just so frustrating. And I was kind of glad to see him lose it with men bickering around him and not just women this time. So I was like, yes, he gets frustrated with the men folk too.
Equality. No, but it is good. Like I saw you'd written that.
I have written it.
You wrote it. You have written it. And it was only when you'd mentioned that I was like, oh, I didn't think about that. Like, you're right. Like, the women have been kind of the butt of the stop it thing, and there hasn't really been that many times where the guys have had that situation. So it was good to see. And then Daniel Bryan, because he's so sick of everything, is like, you know what? We're going to do a preview of the Elimination Chamber. We'll do a Fatal 4-Way match right now. AJ Styles, Miz, Ambrose, and Corbin. That's going to kick off the show. Before we talk about that, though, I do want to say, I don't want to pick on him for it, but like, Mauro Ranallo called it Hell in a Cell twice.
Did he do it twice? I heard it once.
Yeah, he did it twice. And I'm like, oh, like, we all make mistakes, but like, I can only imagine the absolute rage of somebody in the headset backstage.
Yeah, that has to, it has to not help either, having the rage of someone in a headset backstage and then having to, you know, continue speaking. I give commentators all the, like, I mean, I'll give David Otunga shit because he's like really terrible, but I mean, guys like Mauro Ranallo and Michael Cole, they have to put up with a lot to lead those shows. And I mean, how often does Michael Cole call Sasha Charlotte or Bailey, or he gets people mixed up all the time.
So I think the thing is, it's almost like we feel that his job is safe, you know, but there's those, there's the kind of the internet hearsay about like, oh, you know, they added Tom Phillips to the table. Does that mean they're going to phase Ranallo out?
I don't think there's anything to that though, right? Like,
well, I mean, I'm trying to think about, why is there four of them?
I don't understand.
To me, the only reason there's four of them is because you eventually want to turn it into three.
Yeah.
That's the only logical explanation I have.
I guess. Or is it like they want something for Tom Phillips to do because they like him?
Yeah, I think they're grooming Tom Phillips to be the next Michael Cole. That's my, because there's the Michael Cole, I think it was The Observer had reported that Michael Cole in the next few years wants to kind of step away from commentary.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think Phillips leading one show, Ranallo leading the other would be a pretty good way to go. But
yeah, I think it'd be fine. I mean, I like Tom Phillips as a commentator. I think he's pretty decent. And I mean, Mauro Ranallo does a good job, though. I mean, as long as he dials it back on the pop culture references a little bit, like, because there are some times that it just gets annoying. But as calling wrestling, I think he does a really good job. And I mean, I feel like I get questions on Twitter every single week where people are like, why are there four of them at the table? Why does Tom have to be at the commentary table when he's not actually on commentary? Because that's the thing too. It's not a four-person commentary booth. It's a three-person commentary booth. And then Tom Phillips is the host for things like, hey, WrestleMania is coming up, or hey, let's have an interview segment with Nikki Bella and Natalya later in the show. Tom Phillips conducts that, which Mauro Ranallo could absolutely do, but I guess they just want to give Tom something else to do too. It doesn't really make that much sense why they don't have him backstage, except for to be a backstage interviewer. If you're not named Renee Young, you apparently have to be a brunette woman. So
all I'm saying, guys, go to YouTube, Charlie Caruso Blackpool.
It is pretty incredible.
That's all you need to do.
I think she is legitimately good, though. Like, Charlie is pretty good. She's done some of the pre-shows and, you know, she's done some other segments and stuff. And I think she does a good job.
Yeah.
No, she's not nearly as robotic as some of the others.
Yes, there are far worse options than that. So,
poor Dasha.
So we get the Fatal 4-Way, which I thought was a really fun match, which went about 15 minutes almost, and there was tons of big spots, tons of stuff going on. Now, I want to ask you a question, though. One of the criticisms of The Miz, and I don't know whether this is deliberate or this is just the way he does it, but like when Miz was doing the kicks, they're quite poorly executed.
I love that. Do you think he does that on purpose? I don't know.
Because if he does it on purpose, it's genius.
See, yeah, and I don't know if it's on purpose or if he's just really shit at it. But either way, I'm fine with it because I don't think it would be quite as incredible if he were good at the kicks. Because if he were actually good at the kicks, then it would be like, okay, yeah, you're doing Daniel Bryan's kicks and whatever. But the fact that he's doing Daniel Bryan's kicks, he's doing them so poorly and then says, I'm doing your offense better than you ever did. It's brilliant. Yeah. I love it.
But do you, the way that the programming is being presented, do you think that this leads to something at WrestleMania with Daniel Bryan and The Miz? Not necessarily a match, but do you, in your heart of hearts, your gut, do you feel it's leading to something, or do you think it's just kind of a side part of the story?
I feel like it's a side part of the story. I think if anything, it'll be a moment like if, and I don't even really want Daniel Bryan to have to come out and interfere in the Miz's business or anything like that. Like, I don't know where the Miz goes at WrestleMania is part of the issue. And now that we're close enough to WrestleMania, and I guess we'll see what happens at the Elimination Chamber to set up other feuds and whatnot. But I mean, you're the one who plans WrestleMania in your head since like a year ago. What?
That's unacceptable. I don't accept that.
Okay.
6 months.
7 months.
Sorry for enjoying WrestleMania, Sandra.
No, I know. I know. It's fine. But like, where do you see the Miz at WrestleMania?
I think it will be the mixed tag with Cena and Nikki against Miz and Maryse.
Okay, I think so too. And so,
and you know, maybe there is a spot with, like, maybe there is a spot there for Bryan to come out.
For Bryan
to
come and interrupt, because it is actually, you know what, that makes sense, because
brother-in-law
Nikki's his sister-in-law, so he could come out to, you know, like if somebody comes out to interfere on behalf of the Miz, and like Daniel Bryan could face off with them or something. I mean, I guess I wouldn't doubt that there could be shenanigans like that. I'd almost rather there not be shenanigans with Daniel Bryan, weirdly enough. Like, maybe just a moment or a stare-off or something. Like, maybe if... maybe it just leads to, like, if John Cena does propose to Nikki Bella, Daniel Bryan and Brie come out to celebrate with them. And then he gets to give the Miz a look or something. I don't want it to be Daniel Bryan, like, interferes or... because he can't get physical in the match anyway. And I don't think we're going to get Daniel Bryan versus the Miz or anything like that. Like, I know that's, you know, that's the dream. That would be wonderful. But I don't think we're going to get it. And I think a lot of this is just to get heat on the Miz. And it seems to work. I mean, in this match in particular, he had the crowd in the palm of his hand. Because when he was doing the kicks, they were doing, you know, no... completely in sync with him doing the kicks, and they were booing the Miz more than they were reacting to pretty much anything else. So it's working. It's working to get the Miz booed. And I think that might be all the payoff we get.
Yeah. I mean, cause the thing is, Bryan can wrestle. It's just that the level of WWE's strictness, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing. They should absolutely look out for him. Is that they're not comfortable putting him in a match. And I do wonder if, you know, like, I do wonder if maybe, you know, maybe there's a scenario of something like, you know, Bryan comes in when the referee's down to try and count the pinfall or something. And, like, I do think there's a great moment in, like, Miz doing something to Bryan.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, and he kind of just snaps and does one thing back to him.
Like, I mean...
and that can be after the match, you can do that. But, like, I think it'd be nice to just see... all the months of culmination to see one little thing between them.
I think I'm telling myself that it won't happen, so that when it, like, if it does happen, I'll be mm-hmm. even more excited. Because I don't want to build up my hopes for it, right? And then be disappointed if it doesn't. But on the other hand, how cool would it be for Daniel Bryan to just put the Miz in the yes lock?
Exactly.
Because that's not something that's going to require a bump or anything like that, right? Like, he can put on a submission hold without any danger, and that would be so amazing to see. So I mean, if that happens, I will absolutely lose my shit, and I'll be very excited about it.
So I guess we'll see where it all goes. But in the end, we had Baron Corbin pins AJ Styles, because the Miz is about to be pinned from the Phenomenal Forearm, and then Maryse, who is so effective in her role.
She's amazing. I love her.
She pulls Miz out of the ring, and then that gives Baron Corbin the chance to hit the End of Days and AJ Styles and pins him, which is interesting because AJ Styles obviously just come off the match with John Cena. But I think this is probably going to be the story of AJ Styles for the next few weeks, is like that he is getting beaten at points. You know, he's not on his A game, and that's going to lead to him maybe not being successful at
his confidence
chamber.
Has been shaken a little bit, so it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And also, it felt like a bigger deal for Baron Corbin winning than it felt for AJ Styles losing, because I don't really feel like AJ Styles looked bad taking a pinfall loss or something. I know some people are probably going to be like, oh, AJ Styles got pinned, they don't have any confidence in him. They have confidence in AJ Styles. Like, he's a big deal. I'm fairly sure they have a lot of confidence in AJ Styles. And it felt like a really big deal for Baron Corbin to get a pinfall victory on him, and it made Baron Corbin feel main event. So they're clearly building Baron Corbin for things. You know, they have him eliminate Braun Strowman in the Royal Rumble, look like a damn star there, and then they had him pin AJ Styles here with some interference, so it wasn't just like, you know, he cleanly pinned AJ Styles, but he did pin him clean. He hit the end of days, sort of. It wasn't the greatest end of days, to be fair, which was maybe more on AJ than on Baron, but... You know, he hit his finisher on AJ Styles and pinned AJ Styles, and that felt like a really big deal, almost like pinning John Cena would feel like a really big deal. And so I think in that moment I was like, no, AJ Styles feels like a really big star, and beating him feels like something big. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it was kind of it gave AJ Styles an out, because, you know, he's coming off this thing with John Cena. He's not quite in the headspace where he needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the stuff with The Miz, you know, AJ Styles had the match won. He was going to defeat The Miz. And then Maryse pulled him out, and that distracted AJ. And then Corbin has the end of the days. So Corbin gets a big win. AJ's gotten out. Miz looks like a dick. Everybody looks good.
Yeah. I loved it. I loved this match. It was probably one of the best parts of SmackDown.
When I saw there was going to be a dual contract signing, I groaned. I really am at the end of my tether with contract signings in wrestling.
There are too many of them.
Yeah, and like a dual contract signing.
It felt really shoehorned in. I was like, this could either be amazing, or it could just feel like, oh, we need to do something to build this because we only had 2 weeks, and it could just devolve and be really stupid.
And to be fair, I think it could have been executed a lot worse than it was.
I actually really enjoyed it.
But I just, the idea of a dual, it just makes no sense, you know, like, to bring the two feuds. And I like you said, I get why they did it, because probably timing, and they were like, okay, we don't have enough time to have two separate segments, so if we put it all in one, and maybe they'd already said, oh, we'll do a contract signing for the women's title match, and then they thought, we should put Becky and Mickey in there as well. But on the whole, I shouldn't be saying this on air, but fuck it. We were going through some of the kind of upcoming WCPW shows, and there was a contract sign in there, and I was like, why? why? Like, contract signs are stupid for the most part. You know, at least in this one, it was more of a backdrop for promo, really, than anything else.
Yeah, and I think that's when they're effective, because I actually, like, I thought the dual contract signing, like, it could go really well, or it could be really terrible. I really enjoyed this contract signing, actually. Because what I thought was effective about it, and why I think it worked to be a dual contract signing, was the way they executed it. Because the story was, you know, Mickie James saying that she's back, and her whole thing about Becky Lynch, you know, her having a problem with Becky Lynch claiming that they started the women's revolution, and that Mickie James back in the day actually started the women's revolution, because, you know, like, everyone's forgetting her era of wrestling, and everyone's forgetting the work that they did for women's wrestling, which was really interesting, especially just having watched the, you know, Trish and Lita collection, because we did a show on Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes, on Trish and Lita and their careers, and, you know, the women's division during their time, because we had a Patreon request for it. It was really enjoyable. Mm-hmm. So having just watched some of Mickie James's matches against both Trish and Lita, and, you know, other people, and seeing some of that women's division, it gives it a lot more context for me watching Mickie James now. And I'm like, no, she was really good. And I mean, still is, obviously. And that women's division was pretty kick ass. And so I'm just kind of like, no, it makes sense what she's saying. I mean, it doesn't make sense that she's accusing Becky of trying to delete her legacy or anything, because that's not what Becky's doing at all. That's not what the Four Horsewomen at all have been doing. But, you know, if you've been gone for 7 years and you hadn't been able to, like, get a job here for 7 years, and then you see these women being like, we're the first best thing in women's wrestling, I can see as a character her motivation makes sense. And so then she has her alliance with Alexa, and so Alexa's also talking about Becky because, you know, she's backing up Mickey and everything. And then for Alexa, I think the line that just made it for me was when Alexa went to Naomi and said, oh, Naomi, right, I completely forgot you were there.
Best thing she says has become women's champion.
Oh, excellent. It was brilliant, because she still feels like Becky is the bigger threat, and Naomi, you know, and it plays in too, because do I see Naomi as necessarily a contender for the women's championship? Not necessarily, but Naomi's grown on me a lot, actually. And I really like Naomi as a character now. Like, her wrestling still kind of not quite as big a fan.
What an entrance.
But what an entrance. And then, I mean, when Naomi stands up for herself here and then kicks her in the head across the table. That kick was amazing. I loved it. I was like, all right, fine. I'm into Naomi now, because she's standing up for herself. And if she can do moments like that, that's awesome.
If someone tried to make me feel like an afterthought, I'd kick them in the head. So yeah, she did the right thing.
It was absolutely the right thing. And it made Naomi look great. So I think this contract signing worked for me on all levels, basically.
I liked it for the most part. I thought that Becky was really good. I think that the angle with Mickey of her being this sort of like angry vet is brilliant. Like, it really plays in, like you say, because like Mickey was the last of the good women's wrestling era.
Mm-hmm.
So Trish kind of worked with Mickey for 6 months, and Lita worked with her, and then Mickey was kind of left after that with Beth Phoenix and stuff, and then they were having to carry those fucking atrocities like Kelly. And there's a very easy character argument there. The thing with Mickie James is I felt like her promo was very scripted.
Her cadence was so strange delivering it to. I forget who it was on Twitter. I saw somebody say, is Mickie James doing slam poetry?
And yeah, I felt like this was a night of like, it's like when you go to one of those weird stand-up nights where it's like, it could be music, it could be comedy, it could be poetry. And then you get this mad woman who comes up and just starts like freestyling. Uh-huh. Like, what is going on? What is going on here? And like, I think that the content of what she was trying to say was really good, but I was just really taken out of it by the way she was delivering it.
Because, yeah, it was hard to really get into it because it didn't feel like she was speaking like a human. It felt like she was doing a performance.
It felt like this was like of the level of like, Suckering Succotash and Seth freaking Rollins and all that. Like, I think if you just gave Mickie James 3 bullet points and said, right, can you go and just wax lyrical for 2 minutes? Like, it would be great. You don't need to script her any more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, luckily she's so good that it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I just think that if you're someone who's like flicking channels and you flick in and you see Mickie James talking like this, you'd be like, what is going on? But I might almost just be captivated because
she's like, and I am Mickie James, and what are you doing?
It was
doing?
So strange.
And I've heard her do promos where she sounds perfectly human. So it was out of the ordinary for her too. Cause some people always sound kind of robotic and strange when they're delivering promos, but she's not always one of them.
No. So, yeah, it was. I think overall it was effective. It made Alexa Bliss and Naomi have a little bit more heat to their feud. Becky and Mickie should be fun. This is the first pay-per-view. I don't know if there's another one in the last kind of 5 or 10 years where there's 3 women's matches in the show.
Yeah. I mean, someone pointed out to me there were 3 women's matches on the Royal Rumble, but 2 of them were on the pre-show and 1 of them was just to throw everybody in their tag. So this is actually 3 proper women's matches on the actual show. Each with an individual story arc, each with characters who make sense and feel fully formed. And also, the thing that I liked coming out of the dual contract signing was that the stories don't feel completely separate and segmented. Because you had Alexa interacting with Becky still, and you have Becky and Naomi kind of supporting each other, even though they have their own things going on. And you have Mickie and Alexa having an alliance, because that's how the whole, you know, La Luchadora was the way Mickie James came in, and they all feel intertwined. But still separate enough that it's not just like, oh, you're having feuds, but we're going to separate you because of... No, they each have their own individual story and their own arc, but it still feels like a fully formed world and a fully formed division. So I think it's really clever the way they're doing it and the way the stories all kind of blend into one with, mm-hmm. you know, while still maintaining their separate parts and making sense as individual matches. So I am so excited that there are 3 proper women's matches at the Elimination Chamber. I mean, it's basically, there are more women's single matches than men's singles matches.
Yeah, which is exciting.
Yeah, I love it.
Up next, we got Luke Harper in a set with some hanging light bulbs. He talked about, you know, they say a man who's got nothing left to lose is the most dangerous, but what about a man who's never had anything to begin with? Randy Orton stole his family, he's a liar, snake in the grass. But Luke Harper knows how to fix it. He's going to cut the head. He said, cutting the head off the Viper is too easy. No, I want to hurt you. I want you to feel pain. And he said he's going to eliminate Randy Orton in Elimination Chamber. This was very out of the blue. Like, I didn't expect like a very captivating Luke Harper promo to come up on screen, but it did. And it was really good.
It was really good. I mean, I do question the electricity in that room, because that light bulb was flickering a whole lot and it seemed like maybe there's a loose connection. So like, I'm a little worried about the smoky back room situation, because maybe there's going to be a fire and it will burn down. But other than that, this Luke Harper promo was excellent, and I was very captivated by it. And the fact that Luke Harper's calling out Randy Orton for stealing his family, and the line, you know, what about someone who never had anything to begin with, absolutely plays into the Wyatt backstory, because Luke Harper and Eric Rowan would join Bray Wyatt originally, right? Because they needed someone to follow, because they were lost souls. And so if Luke Harper's been this lost soul who always feels fairly lost without Bray, this is the first time Luke doesn't really feel lost without Bray necessarily. He feels like there's a purpose for them to have separated, and there's something that took his family away from him. It wasn't just him being sent out into the world to like fail. It was, no, you stole this from me. And, you know, Bray Wyatt is my leader. He is my everything. And it's, I don't know, there's just a lot of complexity with the Wyatt backstory, because Bray Wyatt has said in the past too that he was lost without Luke Harper. So I'm intrigued to know how that's going to play out too, because we haven't really seen Bray Wyatt address it. We haven't really seen Bray Wyatt address the fact that Luke Harper is split from him. And I mean, when did Bray Wyatt get interesting again? Was when Luke Harper came back. Because for a while, I mean, even on SmackDown for a while, like when it was just Bray Wyatt and Eric Rowan, there wasn't much going on and it wasn't very interesting. And then all of a sudden Luke Harper came back and Bray Wyatt and Luke Harper start doing things when Randy Orton joins. And I don't know, the Wyatt story is all of a sudden so compelling again. And I'm really looking forward to Randy Orton versus Luke Harper. I think that match is going to be killer.
I'm really looking forward to it. I think the story is, and it's like they really have built a story over the last 5 months without us realizing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to see Luke Harper and Randy Orton on Sunday. So I'm excited about where that goes. We then get an interview with Tom Phillips speaking to Nikki Bella and Natalia, who are on different screens.
Because they have to be separated, because they've been fighting so much that they have to be kept in separate locations, which they actually call out. How brilliant is that? I love it.
Mm-hmm. Natalia does look like a contestant on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yeah, actually, that's accurate.
Talk us through this promo and the back and forth and what you thought of it.
Well, I thought this was actually a good promo. I thought this was some of the best promo work they've done. I mean, Natalia and Nikki Bella are not the two best at giving promos and sounding like humans, but I think in this scenario, they did pretty well. From what I remember, Nikki starts out and saying, you know, Natalia and I used to be friends and, you know, now she's spreading all these lies about me or something. And Natalia's like, Nikki and I were never friends. And I thought she had a great line when she said, Nikki Bella doesn't have friends. She has followers. And, you know, she talks about how Nikki always, you know, has people do what she wants. And, you know, she has people on her reality show that just make her look good. Like, kind of discounting the fact that Natalia is also on that reality show and also has people to try to make her look good. But it's, like, impossible because the Neidhards are mental. And then Nikki kind of gets fed up and is like, why are you spreading all these lies about me? And it ends up Natalia says something like, you know, that's why you'll never get what you want. You know, you will never have your own baby or something. And it's something like John Cena is going to leave you for someone who's prettier and better than you. And if I were already married, he would end up with me. Because I was kind of waiting as she was going. I was like, is she going to try and steal John Cena from Nikki Bella? Because, like, we know that that's not gonna happen, because she's married, like in canon she and Tyson Kidd are married for sure. That's weird. But so she did say, like, if I weren't married, he would probably end up with me. And Nikki Bella was like, whatever, I'm done with this, I can't be bothered anymore, takes off her microphone and walks away. So I mean, the content of this feud isn't necessarily my favorite still, but I'm really enjoying the story. And Natalia's delusion runs so deep, right? Like, she's just so delusional, because Natalia also mentions the fact that she had to get her personal security because of all of the attacks from Nikki Bella. And Nikki's like, me attacking you, like, what even are you talking about? Because Natalia is the one, you know, Nikki Bella keeps getting attacked constantly. So now the fact that Natalia is spinning it around and saying, you know, oh, Nikki Bella's attacks on me, which I guess last week out by the truck, I mean, Natalia came out to talk some shit and Nikki did throw the first attempted punch or whatever. So, you know, Natalia has like a kernel of truth to foster her delusion. I don't know. I'm really into the story. I can't wait for the match. I hope they kill each other. Like, I hope that it feels like a fight, because it absolutely should. I don't want to see them just lock up to start this match.
Yeah, they've built it. They've built it well. They've built it and made it a personal issue. And I think the promo here was good. It felt like Natalia was just trying to say anything she could to annoy Nikki Bella.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that was the whole purpose of this, was just, how can I really fuck off Nikki Bella? And that was what it was. And I thought the talking smack thing was really good with Natalia attacking her. And yeah, I think they've set up a good match. I think the difference between this, between Nikki Bella and Carmella, which was it TLC?
Yes.
Was that the that suffered because it just kind of got going and then it finished with a really hokey fire extinguisher spot. But like, you've got Natalia in there who is very, very competent in the ring. So I think it should be good. Obviously, Nikki's maybe her neck is playing up. So maybe that is going to affect the quality of it. But you don't need to have a 5-star match. You can have a 5-star story, which mm-hmm. can lead to a great match.
Exactly. So. And Nikki Bella had another great line in there too, where she said, Natty, you know, you want the truth, because, you know, okay, fine, like, you can't handle the truth kind of a thing. But she was like, if you want the truth, the only thing you've ever been good at is wrestling. So when we have a match and I beat you, what will you have then?
Yeah, my favorite line was, of course, Natalia saying, if I wasn't married, Cena would probably be with me. Like, and like, it's like, I do understand, like, David's brought this up a couple of times. I understand his problem with feuds being about the men that the women are with. It is a valid sort of concern, but I think that it works here because the men that they're talking about are sort of back fodder to the story. It's not that they're, yeah. it's not that like the women are in the back trying to have a voice. It's like the women are the voice and then the guys are just kind of, now what I did have a problem with, in the execution of it, is John Cena on Talking Smack.
Yeah, that was a big problem.
No sense. Explain that to the lovely people.
Okay, well, I mean, I was sort of half watching Talking Smack, half watching you do drunk karaoke. So, but, which was pretty enjoyable, frankly. But John Cena on Talking Smack, I really like the fact that on Talking Smack, Renee brought up to John Cena, like, did you just see what happened with Nikki Bella? And she replays the footage of Nikki Bella being attacked on Talking Smack just, you know, moments ago or whatever. And John Cena just sits there like a robot. Like, he doesn't even really look concerned about her. And Renee's like,
The biggest thing, though, before that, before you even get to that, he comes in, right? Now, Talking Smack is an environment that is kind of, the kayfabe is loosened a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, you see, and he comes in as if he doesn't know what's happened.
Right.
As if, like, so he's logistically, he's going to be a guest in Talking Smack, so he would need to be around that area. His girlfriend is attacked.
He says something. Didn't he say something of, like, he was doing something else?
You know, what did I miss?
Yeah.
And the way he said it was so obvious that he knew what had happened that I actually thought he telegraphed it really badly. Like, I was like, why are you making it worse?
Yeah. Like, I mean, that didn't bother me as much as, because it could be like, oh, he had some media thing and, you know, he knew that he was needed at such and such a time. So he only got there at whatever time. I mean, that it loosely, like, could be excused. Maybe he was, I don't know, doing a shit in the toilet or something. Who knows? But you'd think that he would know what happened because that area can't be that big. And so you'd think that, you know, people would kind of have a buzz, or like someone would come up to him and be like, oh, John, by the way, like, did you just see Nikki got attacked or whatever? Like, you'd think that he would know. But even if he didn't know, even if for some reason he only showed up at that moment, when Renee shows him the footage and he watches it, he does the, like, he doesn't look like, oh, like, I'm concerned about my girlfriend. Like, is she okay? He doesn't even really ask, like, is she okay or whatever. The feeling I got from it was, well, you know, I mean, that is upsetting in his, you know, John Cena promo way. And then, but, you know, Nicole fights her own battles and I let her fight her own battles for her. And that's it. Like, he barely responded. He looked like he was trying to do the John Cena serious face, but it just came off as, no, I am a robot and I don't care about this woman. Which isn't the case. Like, he cares for her, but he did not seem very caring. I wanted him, like, I've wanted for so long for John Cena to respond to all of the Natalia, Carmella, Nikki Bella stuff, because he's a part of that. And I think what they were going for is for him to build her up as strong and, like, build her up as a strong woman who can take care of herself and fight her own battles. But, like,
Didn't work.
It just made it seem like he was a dick.
Well, because John Cena is at his best when he seems engaged in what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And my concern here was, if you're going to fucking mix tag in this situation, motherfucker, you better
start caring.
Yeah, start bringing your fucking A game. Like, to me, what should have happened was, like, John Cena should have came in and been like, I just heard what happened to Nikki. I was doing a press thing, and is she okay? This is unacceptable. And, like, say to Daniel Bryan, like, how are you letting this happen? Like, this is, and, like, have a little bit of kind of tension there of, mm-hmm. like, that would have been good.
Like, even if the Nikki Bella segment of John Cena's appearance on Talking Smack were just like, oh, did you see what happened to Nicole? They play it for him. And he looks more like, oh, well, that's awful. I mean, I've always said Nicole's a strong woman who can fight her own battles, but, you know, I am really concerned about her. Even if he would have looked like he was a little bit more concerned, even, it would have worked a lot better for me instead of just like, well, this is a horrible thing that's happened, but
Nicole, she didn't die, John.
Yeah, I know. It's like, I think it would have been more effective, I think, if he were like, oh, can I go check on her or something? Like, I don't know. Like, he didn't seem like he cared enough for this to really work for me. Because I was like, I was very disappointed because I was so excited for John Cena to finally speak out on it. And then he just came across as a robotic, uncaring asshole, which is not what you want. Like, you want to be invested in their relationship. And yeah, like, I don't want it to just be like John Cena only thinks about Nikki Bella and Nikki Bella only thinks about John Cena. But, you know, if someone attacked my husband, I'd probably be a little bit more concerned than to be like, well, can we just stop talking about this so I can get my promo in?
Yeah, it was, Cena's usually pretty good, but I think he really let the team down on this one tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Apollo Crews versus Dolph Ziggler we got. It was a minute long. We're Cruz rolled up Dolph Ziggler and pinned him. Dolph then attacked Cruz. Ziggler then started hitting Cruz with a chair, to which fans chanted one more time.
Yeah, not really the desired reaction.
Yep. Now, here's the insult, ladies and gentlemen. People think that Apollo Crews is so boring that they think that a heel bland Dolph Ziggler is better.
It's not good. It's not good at all. Like,
when you've got a shit sandwich, oh, but when you've got a shit sandwich, what do you send out there in the end? Fucking Kalisto.
See, and the thing is, I like
the fact that he was the most exciting part of it.
He was the most exciting part of it. I mean, it's kind of funny because I saw Dolph Ziggler get a chair to attack Apollo Crews, and I was like, is it just that chairs summon Kalisto now? Because I would like that to be part of his character. I would like him to be Kalisto, one who is summoned by chairs.
Not a bat signal, just a chair.
Just a chair. Because Kalisto and chairs actually go well together. Like, he did well in that chairs match with Baron Corbin. I liked that chairs match. So now Kalisto's signal is a chair. It was. And, well, I mean, it's not like his best match that I've ever seen, but it was good. And I have high hopes that maybe an alliance between Apollo Crews and Kalisto could be interesting. But so far, it's not very interesting. And so far, they're just, like, stuck on repeat with the Dolph Ziggler, Apollo Crews, Kalisto thing. And, this sets up the handicap match at Elimination Chamber. Daniel Bryan talks to Dolph Ziggler backstage later on after he beats Apollo Crews with a chair and, has to ward off Kalisto and Apollo Crews, whatever, whatever. And Dolph Ziggler is like angry Dolph now, like angry emo Dolph Ziggler is just like, whatever, I could beat them anytime I want to, which is not true because you keep losing. But I could beat them anytime I want to, but hurting them is more fun or something. Like, I could beat them both. And Daniel Bryan's like, all right, fine, handicap match. And a coworker of mine brought this up to me yesterday and said, you know, he was like, maybe they're going to do some sort of like double turn or something with Kalisto and Apollo Crews, like forming this heel tag team. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense because Dolph Ziggler just turned heel and his name is not The Big Show. So they should not turn him back. But what I could see, and this conversation made me more interested in Dolph Ziggler and Apollo Crews and Kalisto than anything they've done on television, but I could maybe see like Apollo Crews turning heel on Kalisto or something and then joining Dolph Ziggler, and maybe they could be a tag team. I mean, we're really heavy on the heel side in terms of tag teams, but that would actually be something as opposed to this. So I'm hoping that something happens at Elimination Chamber to make this a little more interesting, because it seems like we're stuck at point A in this story forever. Like, nothing has really progressed. It's just Dolph Ziggler loses, gets angry about it, beats someone up. They have an alliance against him. He is angry. The end. And that's not a very interesting story. So I'm hoping that something progresses at Elimination Chamber in this handicap match, and that it's not just more of the same, I guess, because more of the same is really boring.
I'm bored even talking about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Just bored.
It's not good.
But one of our listeners on Twitter, Milo, had said, I don't think I've been this excited for a SmackDown Summary Inside the Ropes yet. I expect an hour-long celebration for the Ascension's victory.
Yeah.
Well, you will not be getting that from me.
No,
but perhaps
me neither,
Sondra.
Actually,
will.
But it was kind of just funny to see the Ascension win a match. I was like, oh yeah, they used to do this sometimes.
Yes, so we get a 12-man tag match: American Alpha, Breezango, and Heath Slater and Rhino against the Usos, the Vaudevillains, and the Ascension. And in the end, Victor goes up top to hit. Well, I mean, at one point the fans are fucking clamoring for Rhino.
Yeah,
clamoring for him. He comes in, and then like Victor hits Rhino with a flying knee. Now, when I say flying knee, I mean that in its loosest possible sense.
An ambling knee?
It took me 3 rewinds to even confirm it was an attempt at a flying knee. It looked like a tomahawk chop to me, but, you know. And pins Rhino in the most underwhelming pinfall of all time. And, you know, I don't want to shit all over it, because, like, you know, I guess you do need to give teams a win, but, like, the Ascension.
I mean, you know, like, maybe like they'll start building the Ascension a little bit more. They're trying to build the Ascension up a little bit more, because Daniel Bryan on Talking Smack was talking about, you know, his history with Victor and, you know, how he's worked with him in the past and how he's really good. And I think Victor is actually fairly good. Connor, not so much. But, I mean, Victor can hold his own for sure. And I like the fact that they're giving them a win and they're trying to make them into a thing. And we've seen on SmackDown that, I mean, they took Heath Slater from obscurity and built him up and made him, you know, really, really good. And he was compelling, right? And so you can do that. Like, you can, if you make teams look like stars for long enough, then maybe it'll work. The Ascension, I think the problem is that they've been at the bottom of the barrel for so long, as have most of the tag teams on SmackDown, that it's really hard to believe it. So, I mean, they're going to have to do more than give the Ascension one win to make them look credible and like actual credible opponents for American Alpha. But, I mean, we don't have a lot to work with on SmackDown. I still don't understand why we're not doing American Alpha versus the Usos unless we get a little bit of a revival up in here.
You're just hoping, aren't you?
I am. I really am. Because tag team turmoil is a gauntlet thing, right?
Yes, as far as I'm aware.
So they could get through everyone, think, yeah, we retained our championships, and then the revival could come out and be like, fuck you, we win. And that would be amazing, and I would love it. I'm really hoping for the revival at Elimination Chamber. I won't, like, throw a fit if it doesn't happen, because if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But I think that the SmackDown Tag Team Division needs something, as evidenced by the fact that, you know, and I love Tyler Breeze and Fandango more than most people love Tyler Breeze and Fandango. I love the Vaudevillains more than most people love the Vaudevillains. I still want to see them have a story because I think they could have a story, because Breezango actually were faces on this episode of SmackDown. So they are apparently officially baby faces. They've been acting kind of babyface for a while. We haven't really seen anything happen unless something's happening. Well, I don't even think SmackDown has matches on Main Event anymore because they film it before Raw. So I think, but for some reason, they're babyfaces now. Whatever. I'm happy that they're babyfaces. I want to cheer for them. It lets me cheer for them. I'm happy about that. I think they could have a good, like, secondary, tertiary story with the Vaudevillains that they could build and do something with the tag team division instead of just sticking all the teams out there all at once. JBL actually said on commentary, yeah, we couldn't decide who the contender was, so we just have them all out there at Elimination Chamber. It's like, you shouldn't say that. That's exactly what it is, but you shouldn't say it.
A truer word has never been spoken. They also, like, yeah, I mean, this, I do get they're trying to build a team. I just think if you're going to build a team, you as well to build the Usos or the Vaudevillains. I think the Ascension and Breezango are both opening act tag teams. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's it. I think Breeze and, Tyler Breeze and Fandango could be a comedy team that could go up the card a little bit more at various points.
Yeah.
But like, I think it's got like a ceiling sort of thing on it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
But I mean, look at the New Day seem to have a ceiling as well. And
true. I mean, I'll be honest. It's really hard for me to care about this tag division. Really hard. But I love American Alpha, so I'm trying. So
I'm grasping at straws because I actually love some of the teams in it, and I would like to see more done with them. And American Alpha, I mean, they're so good. They looked great in this match, like when they actually got in the match and were doing their drop kicks and stereo and everything. I think they're really, really good, and I think they're just done a disservice by the fact that the tag division is such an afterthought.
Yeah, you're right. There was also earlier on the show a video tribute played about Rosa Parks as part of Black History Month, and it just made me think, for whatever reason, I was like, if it's Black History Month, we're trying to like talk about equality and all that, why is it that the only people in the video were black?
I mean, so, like, could we not have had black wrestlers talking about Black History Month? I don't have a problem with that. My problem with the Black History Month segments is that, first of all, could we not highlight black contributors to wrestling? Because either you're just ignoring all of the past contributors to the industry of wrestling, and there have been black contributors to wrestling, right? Or you're saying that you don't feel that the black contributors to wrestling have been important enough to the history of wrestling that you have to just profile Rosa Parks and Jackie Robinson like every fifth grade book report. And that's a problem either way.
Like for me, my issue with the videos is if I'm not saying you should have a Black History Month promo and everybody in it's white. That's not what I'm saying. But like, it just it felt to me watching it like it was trying to make a statement, and I thought the statement wasn't as strong as they maybe thought it was. Like, because like most of the contributors in it weren't really saying anything that interesting.
Well, no, because it read like every fifth grade book report, and I think like, I appreciate the fact that there are Black History Month segments. I love that. Like, I love that.
I like that you do Black History Month. I just think that what it said to me was more, here you go, for Black History Month, we're going to put a bunch of black people in a video. And that's it. I think there's more to it, you know?
So, yeah, there should be more to it.
And like, you're saying either go big or go home, you know, talk about Ernie Ladd and then have one of the wrestlers talk about how Ernie Ladd was an influence as a black performer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something like that.
Like, even if you talk about Junkyard Dog, talk about plenty. Like, there are plenty of, you know, talk about Farouk.
Yeah, just anybody.
Talk about Ahmed Johnson. I want an Ahmed Johnson video package. We're not going to get that ever, but but I'm just saying, like, it's a problem for me because if you're the WWE and you want to highlight Black History Month and highlight, you know, like, oh, these are, you know, Black people who've made contributions to the world, that is excellent. But wouldn't it be a little bit more relevant if you were talking about the Black people who've contributed to wrestling? I mean, talk about Norman Smiley training people down at the Performance Center. Highlight him.
I don't know if you want to highlight that, to be honest.
Well, I don't know. But I'm just saying.
Yeah, but I know. I get you. I think you're right. But like.
Because yeah. It's concerning it just, if they don't feel like there are enough Black contributors to the history of wrestling that they can't highlight people within their
Ron
own industry.
Simmons.
Yeah.
First Black champion.
Yeah.
Anyway, main event time, we get John Cena versus Randy Orton. This is obviously falling off of the back of last week's tag team match with Luke Harper and Cena against Orton and Wyatt, where Orton pinned John Cena with a... RKO. This match went about 13, 14 minutes. I thought it was a really fun match.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Wyatt's at the rocking chair at ringside. There's a great spot where Cena's on the top rope, and then Orton does the what would you call it? The DDT.
Yeah.
He does like the rope DDT, but he does it from the top rope one rather than the middle rope. And it just was, the execution of it was excellent. It looked really good. And then Luke Harper runs in because Luke Harper runs in, has a stare down with Bray, and so what happened was there was a ref bump. The ref was down.
Cena not have Randy Orton up for the AA or something, or Randy Orton had him up or something, and one of them hit the ref, and the ref was just gone for a good while.
Yeah, so I think that the ref bump happens, he goes down, Orton taps out to the STF, then Wyatt runs in, him and Orton are kind of like beating up Cena, and then as that's all going on, Luke Harper runs in, has a stare down with Bray, and Wyatt sort of like tells him to leave and shouts at him, and then Harper sort of teases doing it and then just clotheslines the shit out of Wyatt.
Mm-hmm. I got chills. Excellent.
Orton goes for an RKO, but Luke Harper shoved him away. Cena put the AA straight onto Orton immediately, and the ref had sort of recovered in time to count the finish, and got the 1-2-3. I thought the crowd was really hot for it. I think it was a good story to go off the air with. Get into Elimination Chamber. Can Luke Harper beat Randy Orton? Will Bray Wyatt win the title? Can John Cena keep a hold of it? There's a lot of questions, and I thought it was a really good end to the show.
Yeah, it was a really good end to the show. And I mean, it highlights the Wyatt drama that we talked about earlier. There are so many complexities to it, right? And it was, I mean, seeing Bray Wyatt go for the Sister Abigail on John Cena and then hit the Sister Abigail on John Cena, I didn't know how badly I needed to see that until I watched this match and saw him actually hit a Sister Abigail on John Cena. And I was like, ha-ha! Like, it's not full retribution for everything that went down between them, but it felt pretty good.
Yes, it did. It was a very, very enjoyable. The thing about it is, like, on Raw, I don't think that on Raw the Universal title is, like, the best story in the world. Mm-hmm. Well, the Universal title just happens to be there while Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens are having this great thing. Whereas I feel like the SmackDown title picture is really, really exciting because you've got John Cena with the belt, AJ Styles is chasing it, you get, you know, smaller... not smaller, but kind of, you know, upper mid-card guys like Corbin and Miz and Ambrose who are vying for it. And then you've also got all the Wyatt drama of them trying to get involved with it. And there's a lot of excitement in that title picture because of it. And I think that's one of the strengths of SmackDown is that while SmackDown... because SmackDown's not got the big names like, you know, Brock Lesnar or Goldberg or The Undertaker. But instead what they do is they create better stories with their full-time guys for... the belt.
Which proves that you can build good stories with full-time guys for a belt and have it be compelling and have people want to see it. You don't have to just bring in people.
Nope.
You can make this. Granted, it helps that John Cena is a big name. Like, he's a very big name, but he's not there all the time. So I guess you could say that they do have a part-timer with the belt in some capacity right now. But when he's there, he feels like an integrated part of the roster. He doesn't feel like he's just dropping by for a minute.
Yeah, he does feel like a proper member of the roster. But yeah, this would be a big thumbs up from me for this show.
Yeah, big thumbs up for me too. Like, how incredible is it? John Cena won this match, and I felt like he managed to make the Wyatts look more important than he ever did, like, losing a cage match to the Wyatts. Like, he made him look like shit when he lost a cage match to the Wyatts back in the day. And this match, which he won, they still came out of it looking really, really good. So it was nice to see a little bit of retribution, because I still am a little salty about that cage match situation. Haven't really let it go. Well, you know how I feel about the Wyatts.
I do. That's why I think, like, because we didn't really talk pre-Bray Wyatt Undertaker feud. But I have a feeling that was what sent you over the edge with him.
You're just 100%.
That's it.
Yep.
You can do so much, but once you do that,
That was absolutely the point. Because I think before the Undertaker-Bray Wyatt feud, I was kind of all in for it. And I was like, yeah, Bray Wyatt looks so awesome and it's going to be great. And then the Undertaker didn't show up. And I was like, Bray Wyatt should really win this, because the Undertaker hasn't even bothered to show up to say, yes, I will be in the match. He just sent like a text via Tron. And then the Undertaker just won and I was pissed.
Yep. I can imagine that is exactly the one, and that's when it happens.
Well, you know that's exactly when it happened. You talked to me that day. You know I was not okay with that.
Oh, God. I forgot about that. I forgot, like, I'd had such a great time at WrestleMania, and I came home and spoke to Sandra, and I've never been more depressed after a WrestleMania.
Robert and I were so worried, because we were like, Kenny's going to have loved this. And I hated it. And Robert was like sort of in the middle of us, but he really didn't like it either. And yeah, like, we sort of killed your buzz, but sorry.
Now, there was a question from someone that they had for the SmackDown summary, and I'm trying to find it in my Twitter feed somewhere, but it's becoming quite difficult. But while I try and find that one more time, how can people find us on Facebook and Twitter? Or Facebook? No.
We should plug the Facebook. We don't use Facebook enough anymore. Facebook.com/TheInsideNetwork. Give us a like. Join in the conversation. That's what Robert always used to say. But
He did.
Yeah.
I can't find the question. Sorry. Okay. Sorry. Somebody sent a question. I can't find it.
Do you remember vaguely what the question was about?
Nope. Hang on. I think... The thing is, I don't want to say his name, because I know I'm going to butcher it. One of our listeners has the Twitter handle like Real PD Gaming or something like that.
Pranjal Dungana.
Yeah, it was him. He asked a question. I need to find his profile. It's really annoying.
Was it just to you, or was it to me as well?
I think it was to you and me. It was to you and me for sure.
Oh, it was the Carmella thing, right?
There you go. Boom. Okay, so
he said, I don't know if you've already done the podcast, but this is why Carmella wasn't on SmackDown, and he sent us a link to a video of Carmella and James Ellsworth backstage.
Take it away.
Okay. So in the video, from what I recall, because I did watch the video, James is coming up to Carmella and saying, you know, Carmella, I don't get why people boo you, you know, like, you're so great and all this stuff. And she's on her phone, like, can't be bothered with James Ellsworth, who's dressed in his, you know, one outfit that he owns now, which is still my favorite thing about James Ellsworth at the moment, that he owns exactly one outfit and it's that. But she was like, you know, I don't know why people boo me either, but, you know, it's fine. And I don't remember who says, like, oh, we could do great things together. Or she says, you know, we could do great things together, but, you know, we need to take this slow and we keep it professional and whatnot. And James is like, yeah, of course, like, slow and professional. And then she walks away and she goes, James. And he's like, oh, me? Yes, I will follow you. So it's basically backing up my point that Carmella does not fancy James Ellsworth. She is using James Ellsworth as a means to an end. And that is winning matches and having someone to follow her around and be, you know, she can control him and she enjoys that.
There you go. So that's it. Twitter, Sandra? Did you do Twitter?
I didn't do Twitter yet. I only did Facebook that we barely ever use. Follow me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Follow Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And if you want to hear us talk about Trish and Lita, if you want to hear us do like non-big four pay-per-views, we're going to be covering the Elimination Chamber next week over on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Lots of bonus content up there. I can't even remember what all we've posted recently. There's classic content going up at the $7 level. We do the episodes of Inside the Ropes aired exactly 5 years ago today, because Inside the Ropes has been around for over 5 years, which is super cool. Some people have gotten in touch about the classic content and, you know, noted that there are a lot of differences in the show format and everything when Kenny and Robert first started the show. And it's fun to listen back. I'm actually listening back to them myself so that I can try and write descriptions for them, and also because it's fun. And patreon.com/insidetheropes for all that bonus content. And I think
get your Yum Rockets ready. It's time to go inside the ropes.
Yes. Oh, you're gonna get into the intros, I think, soon. Like,
oh god,
your funny intros that you used to do.
The thing I'm worried about is we're a couple of months away from Spazzomania.
I'm so excited to listen to Spazzomania again. I love Spazzomania. I think we should bring it back at some point.
We should. If we can get Brock the Breastmeat against Brock Batista Breastmeat. The Baptist again.
No, it was Dave the Baptist versus Brock
Dave Breastmeat. The Baptist, Brock Breastmeat. Jesus.
Eat, sleep, good night, sweet dreams. If you want to hear that reference, the Royal Ramble is posted also at the $7 level, and that's where that comes from. Robert and Kenny brought back Spazzomania for the Royal Ramble, and it's so good.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Fuck knows why you do, but I appreciate it. I got a really nice message from someone who is he is the illustrator for all the What Culture magazines and stuff, and James Dixon's books on like the Raw Files and all that sort of stuff. And he had said that he'd been put onto Inside the Ropes, and he said that it's he loves the podcast, and there's several wrestling podcasts that he listened to in the last few years, and he feels like ours is the only one that doesn't make it feel like we think we know everything, and takes the listener's point of view into account more than others. So I appreciate that. If people feel that way, that's great.
That's actually a pretty high compliment.
Yeah,
like I appreciate that, because that's kind of our goal, right? Like, I don't claim to be some sort of insider. I just really like wrestling.
Yeah. And I think the moment that you start to become, my opinion is better than everyone else. I mean, there are people whose opinions are better, but you know, like, for the most part, it's like, you know, because there's so many listeners who bring things up that I have forgotten. Like, I'm terrible at remembering who it was that tweeted me for various things, so please don't take offense if I don't get your name. But somebody tweeted me because I'd said to David about, you know, the only person to beat Samoa Joe was Kevin Owens and Finn Balor, and he quite rightly said, well, no, Dean Ambrose did it, and so did Seth Rollins. So they did. You know, he should bring that up. So I'm glad that people can remind me, because sometimes it's difficult to get out of bed. There's so much to do. So it's nice that people can remind us. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a nice week. Enjoy Elimination Chamber. And we will be back on Monday on Patreon with the Elimination Chamber review. We'll be back on Monday with Raw Thursday,
yes,
the retro review, and then back to normal next week with all the bants.
Of course.
Bye.
Bye. No competition. I'm on fire, boy. And now I'm on the mission. Bring it to the flow. To the flow.